looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Jordan's Furniture, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, MGM Springfield, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXD-TV, and Mohegan Sun.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Ely on the 0-1. 99.
A little 99, a little hair for you here in the seventh inning.
Would have been a strike had he not swung the bat. And the 0-2. Strikes him out for the third time. 12 Ks today and counting for Sale.
Oh, yeah.
He finished with 13. Hit 100 miles an hour on the gun again, Chris Sale. We'll get to him in just a minute. But obviously, I was not here on Friday when there was breaking news regarding, I guess you could call it breaking news, more like a breaking tweet by Michelle McPhee, which we'll get to here momentarily. 617-779-0985 is your number here on the Baseball Reporters. We'll take you up until 7 o'clock. Jim Murray was kind enough to fill in for me on Friday, as well as Felger, for that matter. He hosted two shows in one day. Tough thing to do, Murray, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't mind the heavy lifting every once in a while, though.
Okay, so here's my question. Explain exactly what happened from 5:30 to about 7 o'clock on Friday. Would you do that?
Sure. Michelle McPhee, ABC investigative reporter, put out a tweet regarding Hanley Ramirez being eyed in an investigation, a state and federal investigation, dealing with a fentanyl bust. And then we took off from there. We discussed the story, which, you know, you and I had actually heard, or I had heard, and I told you guys on the show, maybe, I don't know, about a month ago, around when Hanley got DFA'd. It's a month to the day today. And at the time that I heard it, it was a good source. That, in law enforcement, I was like, okay, but really? This is why they DFA'd him? I mean, the money made more sense than anything else. But, I don't know, you hear things, you can't really go with it until you actually hear something from someone more reputable, like Michelle McPhee, who's broke a lot of stories in this town specifically when it comes to, you know, crime-related stuff. So, you know, we went with it. We discussed it. And it's since been debunked by the Boston Globe to... you know, to some extent, yesterday. And that's what we talked about. And thankfully we had it, because otherwise I don't know how much we're going to really talk about the Seattle Mariners being in town for the weekend series on Friday night.
Okay, so look, the news on Hanley, and again, I wasn't here on Friday. And believe me when I tell you, Murray was on this before anybody. And you've heard us say, and I think it started on this program one night, when Murray, the two of us were sitting here shortly after the Hanley Ramirez release, maybe, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago. We said, well, there's some stuff out there about Hanley that's not exactly all that flattering. Okay, so it's stuff that could change your opinion of the whole Hanley Ramirez story. So this is my question to you as a Red Sox fan tonight. Does this news affect your opinion of the release of Hanley? Because, oh, hell, it should. I know it affected mine. And so, again, when this all happened, and we're going back now, we're going back a ways, as Murray said, 1 month to the day where Hanley was released. The Red Sox came back from a road trip, and on Monday they released him. And if you think that Hanley's absence, now we're talking about as a baseball player now, if you think his absence has not hurt the Red Sox, the numbers suggest otherwise. So the Red Sox batting average has dropped only 7 points. Their OPS as a team has dropped 21 points, and I wouldn't say that either of those numbers is an egregious drop in the absence of Hanley Ramirez. They played 50 games with him, they played 29 without. But here's the number that should catch your attention. That the runs scored per game for the Red Sox with Hanley and without him have dropped from 5.3 to 4.8. And that might not sound like a lot to you, but if you really weigh it out, it's about 10%. Okay? It's about 10% that the offense has dropped since Hanley was taken out of the lineup. Now, the reason I tell you this is because when the Red Sox first announced that, I hated the move. Hated it. I don't understand, or didn't understand, how a team with World Series aspirations that has invested as much as the Red Sox have in this season, I did not understand how they could cut loose a guy who has a .380 career average in the postseason and hit .571 for them last year. All because They didn't want him to vest a contract option for next year. The idea that it was a quote-unquote baseball decision, I found absolutely ridiculous. It wasn't a baseball decision. It was a business decision, or so I thought at the time. Then, and I want to say it was within a matter of days, Murray heard from some people he knows, Murray heard that there was something going on with Hanley involving a friend of his in a drug bust. Okay? That's what Murray heard.
And the fentanyl part was used, too. Like, it was fentanyl, a car stop, and some involvement. Like, it was so, you know, when this thing came out, that Michelle McPhee tweet came out, I was like, bang, here it is. Like, this is basically exactly what I heard.
So, Murray, if you even remember, and Murray and I, as well as Felger in the afternoon show, we've alluded to this now for a while, but we haven't gotten into specifics. And the reason? Because we had no way of really verifying the story. Murray had it on pretty good word. But again, only he knows the person who gave it to him. No one else here knows him. So we're taking Murray's word for it, and I'm not telling you I don't trust Murray. I'm just telling you we're all skeptical when it comes to this sort of stuff, because if you're wrong, it's a real-life issue. We're not talking about someone's fielding percentage, their ability to play multiple positions. We're not getting into any of that. But we heard the rumors, and we're not saying we were the only ones. A lot of people did. So I started to hear that and say, okay, well, that's a little more serious. Then this story comes out. And so let me try to say this as clearly as possible, because Dakota from Braintree called up in the last show and said to me that, well, you're talking out of both sides of your mouth, which usually means that I sound like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth. So when that happens, that's on me, and that's on the host. So what I will tell you is this, that at the time when they told me it was a baseball decision, I didn't believe them, and because I believed it was a baseball decision. Now I look at it, and I understand why the Red Sox have told us it's a baseball decision, when really there may have been a million elements that played into their decision on Hanley Ramirez. I still believe the contract was chief among them, but if you have a guy who could vest for $22 million next year, and on top of it, he's hanging out with some shady characters who are transporting fentanyl from New York to Boston, and you become alarmed about whether or not this guy's mixed up in something and whether it's worth it, then you know what? You made the right choice. You made the right choice, obviously. Time to move on. Okay, time to move on. The right-handed bat we'll get to. But the Hanley as a problem, and I wasn't even willing to accept Hanley as a clubhouse problem, as a culture problem, any of that. I didn't want to hear any of that, because that's been true since the day he got here. But if there was really a potential legal issue, and clearly, you know, again, he may or may not have been linked to this. At the very least, he was hanging out with guys who were transporting fentanyl across state lines into the to the point of where it is now a federal and state drug investigation.
And as an employer, you would want to push away from that person and that player in the Red Sox and the Hanley case as quickly as you possibly can. So you can't convince me that they didn't know this information when a guy like me got it within days of him being released. And that being said,
Murray, they knew.
Of course they did.
They knew.
But there would be potential legal ramifications or a grievance from the MLBPA, as you pointed out in the afternoon show a few times today, if they just... That was the reason that they let him go without an arrest. You know, without a charge, that would just be like, well, again, sets themselves up, sets the team up for, you know, a grievance, a lawsuit, something of that nature. So they had the easy out in the baseball decision. So I, like you, while I don't think that it's the truth, I understand it.
Okay, so and this is the greater point now with the story the Red Sox gave us way back when, a month ago, when they released this guy. And they said it was a baseball decision, which it isn't. At the very least, it's a business decision, but we know now it goes beyond that. Okay, but when the Red Sox say that, as Murray pointed out, the Major League Baseball Players Association still has a ton of power. On what grounds could the Red Sox release Hanley when no legal charges have been brought against him? And so far, to our knowledge, he's done nothing wrong. On what grounds they could release him? We don't like your friends? We don't like your friends, Hanley, so we're going to let you go. And we're going to cost you potentially $22 million in 2019. You don't think the Major League Baseball Players Association is going to grieve that? And I'll tell you what. Let's say he was mixed up in the middle of this, but he wasn't found guilty yet. I'm not even sure the Red Sox could do it then. Now, look, there are those of you out there who are far more versed in the legal aspects of things like this than I am. But I know how the Major League Baseball Players Association acts, how strong they are, how they defend players at every single turn. Remember, they were willing to throw their whole body, their whole constituency, under the bus during the steroid era to protect players. Okay? Now, I was going to say a few, but the number was more rampant than that. But the union, if the Red Sox released Hanley on grounds other than baseball, they were probably going to get come after by the union. The union was going to go try to get some of that $22 million. And so here's what I said to the Red Sox. You're playing it smart. I get it. You're playing it smart. Because you can always release a player for baseball. You can always, always do that. We released your client. Well, why? Because we think he sucks. That's why. And we have the right to do that. We pay him to perform. He's not performing. So when Hanley went bad in May, the Red Sox said, you know what? Here's our opening. We'll get out from under the contract. And on top of it, look at who he's hanging out with. The last thing we need is some sort of scandal here. So they cut his ass and they got rid of him. And nobody has picked him up since. And I cannot honestly look at them today and tell you that I blame them. And I understand why they say it was a baseball decision. Okay, there was a reason for it. There was a reason for it. I think they're a worse team on the field as a result of it, but you got to do what you got to do. 617-779-0985. I want to get to Chris Sale as well, because a week ago, a lot of you got annoyed when I suggested that he shouldn't have blown a 1-0 lead and ended up losing a 2-1 game. Which brings me to his performance yesterday. I'll explain when we come back.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. We have the Sox covered. Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Maserata, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The last game here in Game 4, he dominated. So I'm glad that he feels fresh. I'm glad that, you know, we've been very disciplined as far as what we mapped out in, you know, during the off season. And I told Carlos after we took him out, I'm like, man, this is great. You know, 7 innings, throwing 97, 98. Can't wait to see him the rest of the season because he looks like he's in a great place.
It's Alex Cora on Chris Sale, and we'll get to your calls here in just a second on Hanley Ramirez, certainly, and on Chris Sale as well, because I want to bring this part up. A week ago, a little less than a week ago, Sale pitched in Minnesota. He had a 1-0 lead, and that was the game where he went up against Jose Berríos. And I told you going into that game, if the Red Sox come, if we come back tomorrow, this was the night of the game, if we come back tomorrow and Sale loses a close game, I don't want to hear you bitching about the run support. I told you that night before the game. They lost 6-2, and Sale had a 1-0 lead in like the sixth inning and then gave up a couple of runs, and the Red Sox ended up losing the game 6-2. But they didn't score for him again. They didn't. The next day I told you I didn't want to hear about the run support and that a guy like Sale, when he gets a 1-0 lead against a team like the Twins, he's got to make it stand up. You got to make it stand up. That's why you're an ace. That's why you're the number one starter, because you're going to go up against good pitching. You are going to be matched up against the other good starters in the league, and you have to win. That's the whole point. Anybody can beat the number five bum starter. And so when you get into a close, tight game, that's the one I need you to win. That's the whole point of having an ace. So you know what happened yesterday? Sale was in a tight, low-scoring game. And the other guy cracked first. The Red Sox scored a couple. Then they extended it to 5-1. They end up winning the game easily. And believe me when I tell you, Sale yesterday, eye-popping stuff. Maybe as good as I've seen all year long. At times, that slider hasn't been right. Yesterday, he was nails. And the fastball was alive. Even the other guy I thought was pretty good in the early part of the game. Like, the pitcher, again, it felt like it was going to be another duel. It felt that way. Except this time, Sale didn't crack. So, if I'm going to be consistent, I sit here and I say, that's the game I need from that guy. No matter who he's pitching against. If it's 0-0 in the fifth inning, don't give up the first run. Don't get behind. Because that's what it's going to be like in October. Now, relating to Cora's comment, sales innings are down. His pitch count is down. We are now at the midway point of the season. He's got a break coming up here at the All-Star break. Hopefully the Red Sox will manage that one properly and give him a break on the front end and the back. And if they can, give him 10 days off. Hell, give him 2 weeks for all I care. Whatever it is, give him the break. Because you are going to need the guy you saw yesterday. That's the guy you want to see in October. Boy, he was good yesterday, man. He was absolutely freaking dynamite in that game. We'll get to your calls now. We'll kick it off tonight with Zach, who's in Billerica. Zach, what do you got?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about how if this story on Hanley Ramirez and the Fentanyl Association is true, if he's like monetarily involved with this guy, like helping him deal, supplying him with money, that's just so disheartening because the way that it's affecting our communities is it's scary.
People okay, so like, so Zach, aside from being disheartening, it's illegal. He'll go to jail.
Oh my! Incredibly illegal. He's in my eyes, it's bottom of the bucket type of drugs, like. Unacceptable.
Okay, so look again. Like that part of it's obvious, right? We're talking some bad stuff, and when Murray first got wind of this Hanley report that it involved fentanyl, that somebody was stopped with a ton of fentanyl. In this case, it was 2 kilos. And Murray, you got to explain it to some people because if you remember, I asked you that night off the air
what exactly it is.
Right? No. You told me. You said fentanyl, and I said, Murray, I'm an idiot. Like, what exactly is it?
It's a highly powerful, highly addictive synthetic opiate, which, you know, if anytime I feel like you look up at the news now, there's a first responder or an officer that's touched it in an arrest or an overdose, and they touch something as small as a grain of salt, and they too OD because it, you know, goes through the skin and it's too much for the body to handle. But it's extremely powerful. It's incredibly dangerous. It's insidious. I mean, it's taken over. It's the opiate problem is not just locally and nationwide. It's such a huge problem, but it's
a heroin equivalent.
Even more powerful than that. My understanding is that it's added to, dealers are adding it to heroin to try to kick it up. And, you know, the unfortunate thing from my understanding is that with those that OD, they look at that as, you know, the addicts are looking at that as like, okay, I want to try that because I know the stuff works and I know it's powerful. So I want some of that. So what dealers are doing is actually adding this to heroin to make it more powerful.
I mean, this stuff is the worst of the worst. And you know what? Even if it was something less potent, it doesn't matter. The story is real, and the Red Sox I believe they knew. And the Red Sox...
Again, with the timing, there's no way. There's no
Murray,
way
they knew. Know. They had to know. Again,
they're just covering their own ass.
They know who these guys are consorting with, and they just don't want to open the door for any sort of litigation or grievance on the part of the union, from the union on Hanley's behalf. And you know what? I can't blame the Red Sox on that one. I can't blame them. I think they're doing the right thing. Okay? I think they're doing the right thing. At the time, I hated it because I thought I didn't understand how they could make a decision based solely on money, and I do hate the money part of it. I don't like the practice of the Red Sox releasing players because they don't want to pay them short-term or long.
Well,
I don't like it.
Just in terms of the I was with you, too. In terms of the baseball, outside of this last little burst with the offense here, 3 out of the last 4 games, the prior couple of weeks, you mean to tell me they couldn't have used Hanley Ramirez's bat in there?
Absolutely they could have. No question about it, they could have used Hanley. Ray in his car, and is it Maz and Braintree? That can't be right. There's got to be a mistake there. But I think they want to talk about the same thing. So I'm going to try to bump the back-to-back here. Ray, what do you got?
Hey, Tony. Hey, Jim. How you guys doing? So I agree. I think they knew what you agree with you guys. Here's my question. You know, during Dombrowski's press conference, when they were talking about letting Hanley go, you know, now it's interesting that he kind of passed the hot potato on the court saying it was, you know, all of his decisions. So just wanted to get your thoughts on that, seeing, you know, what Cora might have known, how long, and, you know, where's he getting the information from. So thanks, guys. Big fan of the show. Appreciate it.
Okay, so again, Ray thinks that the day they made the announcement, the day they released Hanley, that they dropped it in Cora's lap. Is it Maz and Braintree?
You got it. I can't tell you how many people call me Maserati just because my name is Maz.
Okay, excellent. Good. I'm happy about it. Go. I thought it was a typo, but go ahead, Maz.
No, your screener got it right. So listen, it's the same thing. And listen, I support everything you're saying about the Red Sox and knowing the information and that there was something big. And I listened to you guys, and I thought it was Jimmy Stewart that actually said, hey, guys, I don't know if you've seen this, but we got to go off the air. And you guys all got giddy and got off the air. But more importantly, let's talk about this concocted marketing story that the Red Sox have pushed out once again
for
all of us to believe.
Just try to be quick, Maz, because I got other people lined up, too. So go ahead.
So look, DeBrowski comes out, he takes all the heat off himself, and he puts it all on Cora. Like, Cora's a genius, and look at what he did, and look what he's going. At the end of the day, I'm not sure we can take... They've got to earn their stripes is what they've got to do, and they've got to demonstrate that they can manage the right way all the way into the World Series again.
Okay, so look, I let you go because you're starting to break up too. Josh is in Rhode Island, I think, has a similar thought. Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, my thought was just, do you think Dombrowski was lying about Cora coming to him, and that was just a scapegoat to push off the blame? And how much can we really trust them now?
Okay, so look, again, it's an easy thing to look at and say, well, when they released Hanley, the Red Sox gave you this kind of odd story about how Dave Dombrowski... Well, I think we have the audio, right, Jimmy Stewart? You did find it? So, Jimmy, go ahead and play it.
I talked to Alex about yesterday, Alex Cora. We were prepared to maybe go in a different direction with our move. He called me. It was about 11:30 in the morning. I was getting ready to go for a run. And Alex says, I've got a thought for you about what we're doing. And he said, this is a move that I would like to make. I recommend making. Ultimately, it comes into my final decision. But he said, I really want to play Mitch Moreland more. He's a good player. He's played very well for us. I don't think that Hanley is a person that sits handling on the bench well. It gives us an opportunity to keep Blake Swihart and also be in a position where Blake could get some more playing time.
So, look, Dombrowski lays out all the reasons for you, and we all remember that comment, but it was worth listening to again. So Alex Cora picked up the phone and called Dave Dombrowski and said, hey, why don't we do this? As if somehow Alex Cora, rather, has the power to release Hanley Ramirez and make a contractual decision on top of it, which they never cited in that cut we just played you from Dombrowski. So, in the last few minutes, just a couple of you called in and said, did they dump it on Cora's lap? And others of you, how do we believe them? Don't you get it? The fact that they put it in Cora's lap, the whole point of putting it in Cora's lap is that it becomes a baseball decision. The manager doesn't make business decisions. The manager doesn't necessarily sit there and suspend a player. I mean, he could. But he doesn't suspend a player for who he hangs out with. He's not the guy following him around. The manager fills out the lineup card. The manager handles the day-to-day baseball. That's why they put it on Cora. The whole thing makes sense, really, if you think it out now. At the time, we thought it's because they didn't want anyone to be able to second-guess the business decision, which is still a part of it, and a big one. In fact, it's really the number one decision still. No. We're not going to open ourselves up to a grievance with the union or anyone else. So we're going to say the manager is the one that really pushed for this because he wanted to play Mitch Moreland more? Because he wanted to get Swihart in the lineup? Who still doesn't play a lot? No. This was about getting rid of Hanley. Okay? And they wanted to keep everything away from it as far as possible other than baseball. And the best way to do that was to put the manager in the middle of it. They didn't dump this on Cora. Along with Cora's agreement, I'm certain they used the manager to cover themselves for the long term. And again, in this case, I don't blame the Red Sox. This stuff with Hanley is scary. It is. It's scary.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub. This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Maserati, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Red Sox 5-0 winners over the Seattle Mariners yesterday. They take 2-3 from Seattle. Meanwhile, the Yankees had some difficulty with the Tampa Bay Rays. So the division, basically an even dead heat again. The Yankees are percentage points ahead, but largely because they've played four fewer games. They have two fewer wins than the Red Sox and two fewer losses. So effectively, it's a dead heat. Okay, again, the Yankees' winning percentage is a little bit better. But even so, I think this is how it's going to be all year long. And in that win yesterday, one of the... I want to say nicer developments for the Red Sox, although it means nothing if it's only one day. Jackie Bradley went 3-for-3. Three hits for Jackie Bradley. How'd you like to have a three-hit game and get up to 189 for your batting average? How'd you like that? Which brings me to this story that was, the original story was written by Susan Slusser in the San Francisco Chronicle. And, you know, Susan's covered the Oakland A's for years. So, I mean, she was, you know, she'd been on the beat since I did it years ago. And does a good job out there. And she wrote something that was picked up by the outlets here. This was written by Chris Cotillo on MassLive.com. But the Red Sox have discussed potential trades with the Athletics. And here's a key phrase. Unsuccessfully asked about outfielder Mark Canha, according to Susan Slusser. Canha is spelled C-A-N-H-A. So I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right. But according to Susan Slusser, the A's have five starting pitchers on the disabled list right now, and they're looking for starting pitching depth. And so the Red Sox, in theory, offered up one of their starting pitchers for Mark Canha. And if you don't know much about Canha, you shouldn't. So this tells me a couple of things. First of all, Canha this year against left-handed pitching has been exceptional. 308 average with an OPS over 1,000. He has eight home runs against lefties. He is slugging .667. And he plays all three outfield positions, and I think he plays first base as well. So this is precisely the type of guy that you could see the Red Sox going to get to replace Jackie Bradley, at least against left-handed pitching. Because Betts and Benintendi are going to play all the time. So it's got to be Bradley who sits. So they can play Canha in left, they can play him in center, they play, you know, they leave Benintendi and Betts in the lineup, and he can hit left-handed pitching, and the Red Sox this year against lefties have not been good. I think overall they're 10-9. Okay, so this is something to keep an eye on, is their inability to hit left-handed pitching. Another thing that Hanley Ramirez historically did very well, just as an aside. But with regard to Canha, two things concern me. One, that this is the kind of player the Red Sox now have to go after because they can't really pay a big price because they don't have prospects to deal. Mark Canha is the best they can do because they can't go out and trade for a bigger name. That's the best they can do. Again, had you even heard of the guy before I brought him up? He's 29. He's been in the big leagues 4 years. Murray, you got something over there? Oh, all right. Sorry.
No, I was going to say I never heard of this bum.
Okay.
I have something for you, Tony. Nick Cafardo says that the Red Sox might be interested in Adrian Beltre?
With Texas.
With Texas, yeah.
Okay, so this makes me happier. Like, there's a legitimate guy to go after that I would love to hear. And so, you know, Beltre introduces a number of possibilities. But I'd also be surprised if they can make the deal, Jimmy, and I'll tell you why. Again, you want to take Devers out of the lineup against left-handed pitcher. If you get Beltre, Beltre's going to play every day. And then beyond that,
Cafardo writes, Beltre would likely see time at both third base and DH with Devers having struggled all year against southpaws.
Okay, so he'd play third base against lefties and then DH, and that means that Benintendi,
JD Martinez would see the outfield with JBJ on the bench.
There you go. Okay, so look, you want to, I mean, but again, that's left-handed pitching, right? Beltre to me is going to play every day. But again, I haven't followed Beltre that close this year. Maybe you can tell me what
314 batting average, four home runs, 48 games.
Okay, so the power's down anyway. But he's also
hitting 350 in 45 plate appearances against left-handed pitching.
And how many home runs?
I don't have that.
Okay.
Sorry.
So look, Beltre intrigues me. That type of name I'm happier to hear. But I also think that in the case of the Red Sox, a guy like Canha might be the best they can do, particularly if they want to get bullpen help too. And then on top of it, unsuccessfully attempted to get. So Oakland looked at them and said, sorry, you don't have enough to get Mark Canha? Doesn't that concern you a little bit if you're a Red Sox fan?
Yeah, that should really tell you just how barren their farm system is and just show you that, you know, maybe the Red Sox, and rightfully, aren't willing to play ball with anyone that's a good young player like a Devers. But really, outside of that, what the hell else do they have? Nothing.
I mean, again, Murray, it's scary. It is. It's scary. So in any case,
you got told no by the A's.
for nobody.
Right.
Oh, and I forgot the best part about Canha. Career, he's like a 230 hitter. And last year, he hit 200 against lefties. His career numbers against lefties aren't good. This is the 1 year he's hit lefties. And all of a sudden, the Red Sox have to target this kind of guy because the cost is less. Now, look, there's some defensive versatility there, too, which helps. Don't get me wrong. That's probably a significant part of it. But the A's said no. They said no. So, like, would you have to give up, like, Stephen Wright for that guy? That feels like a huge overpayment. Stephen Wright's a functional big league pitcher
as
a starter.
Not Friday night, he wasn't.
Not for what? Well, right. So, but overall, like...
Tony, I'd rather have Beltre. Like,
oh, of course,
leadership in the room, player, third base, defense, DH. Just give me Adrian Beltre, whatever the cost.
So, you know what? If you guys could do something quickly for me and just look up what Beltre's salary is, because this is another issue that the Red Sox are going to run into. JT's in Worcester. JT, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I want to talk about Chris Sale and his pitch count compared to last year. You were talking about how much it's down. How do we know exact numbers? How much it's down and how that is going to impact him going into October, if you know, compared to if they have the wild card or they win out the division? And I'll take your answer off the air.
Okay, so JT, so far, and I saw the exact number in the Globe today, but you know, it might have been the Herald. I don't remember.
Adrian Beltre, by the way, $18 million.
Okay, so we'll get to Adrian Beltre back in a second. But on Sale, I think he's thrown about 150 fewer pitches than he did a year ago, which is a start and a half. Think of it in those terms. That's good. We'll take everyone we can get. They keep this pace up, you get three more starts out of them. Think of it that way. You'll save three starts, and you'll get them tacked on at the end. He'll have the bullets left that he didn't have last year. And in terms of the innings, I want to say it was 12, which, again, is a start and a half. Maybe closer to two, you know, if you have a big lead, you can pull them after six innings. So the Red Sox are doing a pretty good job there so far. And again, this to me is an important thing for them to accomplish during the regular season. They have to protect Chris Sale. You got to save those bullets. Dan is in Northborough, wants to talk about the Dombrowski presser when they release Hanley. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I never listened to it kind of as analytically as I was driving home and you guys played it again. That has all the familiar symptoms of, like, if you've ever worked in an office and you throw a fake meeting on your calendar for Friday afternoon so you can cut out early, and then your boss comes in Monday and goes, "Hey, how was that meeting Friday afternoon?" And you're like, "Oh, it was great. He ran a little bit late. But then we went and got coffee," and you provide more details than anybody ever asked for in the first place because you're covering up what actually happened. It was 11:30 in the morning, and I was about to get ready to go for a run, and then Alex Cora called me. Like, that is, hey, we're releasing this guy because, number one, he's not producing, or maybe, number one, he's somehow involved in dealing fentanyl, but number two, he's not producing. This is our talk track. Go out and deliver it.
Dan, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on you. Listen, it's a good point that there were some unusual details in there as to how the whole thing unfolded. And you know what? Someone else has, more than one person has said this to me in the last several hours, and this goes back into this morning. But when the Red Sox released Hanley, don't you find it odd that none of the players in the clubhouse really said anything of consequence? Well, we're going to miss him. He was really a good guy in here. Or nobody said anything like that. Not even close. All you heard was, well, we wish him well. So maybe they were sick of him, which is entirely possible. Or more likely, and this is what I think happened, the organization made it clear to everyone, listen, here's what we're going to say. Okay, maybe the Red Sox decided it with Cora, and I say management, Dombrowski, Henry, whoever, they decided it with Cora, and then Cora relayed it to the players. Okay, listen, Hanley's gone. We're going to get questions about him. There's some stuff going on. Here's what you have to say. We are not going to say anything that would leave us open to some sort of grievance or potential legal action by the Players Association because we released him for something other than baseball reasons. There's some legal stuff going on. You guys just got to trust me. And so they all just skated their lane and said exactly what they were supposed to say. Okay, exactly. As it pertains to Beltre, Jim Murray just told us he's making $18 million this year.
Correct.
Okay, so this is another thing now. The Red Sox are within, I don't know, $8 to $10 million of that luxury tax threshold at $237 million, and they are already paying the luxury tax, folks. The $237 threshold would cost them place in the draft. Like, they would have to slide 10 spots down. There are all types of, in a higher tax rate, there are all types of ramifications of going over 237, which they are not going to do, I don't think. So how are they going to get Adrian Beltre under there?
Texas retains money.
So that's one scenario. But again, Jimmy, if that happens, then you have to give up more talent.
You have no talent, so what does it matter?
So this is the issue. Normally in the past, usually to make trades and to get good talent, you need two things. Prospects or money or both. Okay? Prospects or money or both. The Red Sox have made some of their biggest, best trades when they've had both. So they were able to go out and get, for example, Pedro Martinez when they had a ton of payroll and they had some prospects in the system. Boom. In business. Theo was able to go out and get Adrian Gonzalez because he had prospects and he had money. That's why he was able to make that deal. When you're a big market team and you have those two things, you can do anything you want. Right now, the Red Sox have neither. So if they want to give up less talent for Beltre, they got to take on the money. If they want Texas to eat the money, they got to give a little more talent. And they have to do that competing against anyone else who might want the same players. I'm telling you, it's going to be a tough deadline for Dombrowski.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.